Farpoint Media.
Mangan, you've really got your shit together. Jack Mangan, you've got your shit together. Spherical Tome, 16 pieces at a time. Dirk Moonfire, each story is divine. Mangan, you've got your shit together.
Okay, no time for a theme song this week. Welcome to Deadpan number 52. We have lots of material, and, well, like it's a podcast, so all the time in the world to do it. But damn it. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Tom from MySpace. And this has nothing to do with Tom, but for the remainder of the podcast, I will be speaking in Comic Sans font. But enough about that. Let's set up for the Greasy Jelly Bean contest. And if there was time, I'd explain it to you, but there's no time. Listen to episode 51. The predictions for the number of comments that will appear on episode number 51, we have 657, 749, 850, 639, 998, and 787. And as of early in the evening, we're in the low 600s, so the 639 is probably our winner, but we'll have to wait and see. Now, featured in this episode, of course, will be some holdover content from you guys, and some new content, because our friend Amy Bowen is traveling to Japan and calling in some of her travel updates. But of course, the main reason for this episode's existence is to finish up the Richard Hatch interview. Richard Hatch of Battlestar Galactica, of course. The OG Apollo, and the new G, Tom Zarek. And incidentally, Battlestar Galactica only has one more season to go as of this recording, and I sincerely hope that we see more of Tom Zarek in that final season. That's just my two cents, not that you give a shit. All right, on to the content.
Hello, NASCAR fans. I'm here to tell you about a podcast that's been created for you. Except, there's just no way to talk about NASCAR and remain deadpan. Welcome to the Cup Car Update. This 5 to 10 minute bi-weekly podcast was created for the busy NASCAR fan who doesn't have time to surf for the latest news. We scan the news sites and summarize the stories for you, so if you've got a little time to kill on your morning commute, the Cup Car Update can get you up to speed. At the Cup Car Update, we're not trying to entertain you. We feel like NASCAR is pretty entertaining all by itself. So if you're looking for a podcast with colorful personalities and opinionated banter, this podcast isn't for you. If you're seeking a source for summarized news and information updates from the world of Nextel Cup Racing, then you've come to the right place. www.cupcarupdate.com, the news and information podcast created by NASCAR fans for NASCAR fans. Sorry about that, Jack. We now return you to your regularly scheduled deadpan, already in progress.
Nobody loves you. But don't feel special. Nobody is a dirty, dirty whore. This is Marlo Diane, and you are listening to The Deadpan.
And so now, with the aid of the technological marvel that is the cell phone, Amy Bowen gives us a travel update.
Hello, Jack.
I kick ass for the Lord!
Button here. Yeah, no, yeah, okay. Yeah, we're going to see the movie 300.
Yes.
And this is five mildly buzzed guys. Ever.
Go ahead. Yourself,
yay,
you are.
Buzz.
Five mildly buzzed gentlemen are
five.
Going to see.
What's this mildly stuff? Mildly. There's some serious buzz going on. I had the Avery Brewing Company, The Reverend. I believe it was created by God, feared by Satan, and loved by all. It was only 10.5% alcohol. And that was only some of the beer tonight, but, we split that up. And, let's see.
More than Firewater.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
So now we're going to go watch a bunch, 300 guys in particular.
We're going to go watch 300.
Kick some leather Speedos.
In leather Speedos.
And,
work on the app.
What a little introductions, right?
So we got, what, Daniel?
Say hi.
Hi, I'm Dan. Hello.
All right. And we got Travis.
I'm Travis. Thanks for coming to my guy's night.
I used to live with this guy. We got Mark.
Word.
That's Mark. And we got Jeffy.
Yep.
That's Jeff.
All right. Up there. Look out. Take a right and park in the alley here.
Oh,
he just turned in the alley.
Yeah, he just turned in there.
All right. If you're behind him, they can't get you.
This is how to avoid a cop podcast 101.
How to avoid a cop.
Follow him.
Don't flip him off like this, into
the alley here.
Try not to run into the back of him.
Alley.
Left, left, left.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to avoid a cop.
Is this where you're at?
Yes, now park right after the dumpster on the right-hand side.
Tune in next week for the dramatic conclusion of Paul Mackey and Friends' Drunken Journey to C-300.
Hello, this is Amy Bowen again. I'm trying it again to see if it'll work this time. This is airport update number one. I'm just about to get on the plane here in Ontario. Was delayed 15 minutes, but that's okay. And it's nice weather here, but apparently it's windy in San Francisco. Talk to you later.
You've given a lot of actually really deep insights, which maybe some people weren't expecting.
Well, you know, I think the important thing is here is that people have an illusion about Hollywood, about actors, about performing, about projects. You know, there are all kinds of people in Hollywood, but there are some very gifted people, very visionary people. There's people who care about this world, and most artists, you know, they do develop a tremendous empathy for the human condition because they do have to go through such an acid test and a challenge. Most people, they see them making money, they see them famous, they think everybody has a big house, they think actors have total confidence, no fear, and they put them up on pedestals. Artists are constantly put up on pedestals, or they're put at the bottom of the food chain with no respect whatsoever. Some of the most gifted, talented people who are not famous or successful are looked at with disdain by their friends because people don't have faith or trust the world of art. In fact, they have many harsh judgments about artists. You know, they're irresponsible, flaky, whatever you want to call it. But people have no clue what this world is all about. And all I can tell you is it's not something that is for the weak at heart. It takes a lot of guts, a lot of strength, a lot of courage to go in this business. And I really take my hat off to people who find a way to break through and become successful. And I really take my hat off when somebody gets a really good project through the pipeline, because as most of us fans know, too many good projects never make it, or they go off before their time, and a lot of really mediocre projects seem to stay the course. So, you know, when I see a really great show like Battlestar, mm-hmm. I take my hat off, and I'm developing this Great War Magellan, which for me is a show that mirrors the world also. Obviously, I'm lending insights into the human condition in my own unique way. But certainly Ron Moore is an inspiration to me. I mean, his way of doing business, the way he comes at characters, develops relationships and stories. I mean, this man is a godsend to the not only the world of sci-fi, but I think he's going to obviously go on to make some wonderful movies and other kinds of TV series as well.
Right. I was curious about how he won you over, because from what I understand, since you had another vision of where the next incarnation of Battlestar should go, how did he win you over?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm won over by people who have the courage, who have integrity, who have vision, who have guts, who are willing to, you know, go out there and do something that they really believe in. It's not about right or wrong. I mean, too many people end up backing down or doing things just to please people. You know, Ron Moore was given an opportunity to take a show, and it was on 25, 30 years ago, and bring it to the world of today. And obviously there's many ways to do it. I had a very, very strong vision for where I would have taken it. Tom DeSanto and Bryan Singer had a strong vision. Glenn Larson had a vision where he wanted to take it. But thank God, the point is Battlestar could be done 1,000 different ways. And the truth is I don't own Battlestar. It wasn't my original story. It's just a story that I profoundly connected to, got more involved emotionally than I realized. And obviously, I was really working my ass off to promote a revival and to inspire a revival. Had no idea, you know, where that would lead. But I can only say that I've learned the hard way that, what's the word I'm searching for? That things, there are many ways to do something, and there are many viable ways to do something. And obviously, every fan out there would, if they had the power and the ability to do it, they would have done Battlestar slightly different. The question is, the opportunity came to Ron Moore, and thank God they gave it to a gifted, visionary, you know, writer, producer like him and David Icke and the team that they brought together, because I've been in this business a long time. There's a lot of talented people out there, but it's rare to get on a show where there is such a, from the top to the bottom, such a powerful group of talented, gifted, passionate, visionary people. I mean, I've only been a part of a few shows that I could say, my God, what an extraordinary crew. And this Battlestar, you know, was put together from the top to the bottom in a really, really insightful, visionary way. And so I take my hats off. I mean, I would have loved to have seen a continuation. That's what I fought for. And knowing Ron Moore and company, I would have probably, if I was the guy in charge, I would have used all of these same people. I could have used all the actors, the writers, everybody in a continuation. You literally could have done that with everybody. But, you know, that wasn't the choice. I mean, obviously, you know, I wasn't in a position of power or authority. I didn't own it. So the question is that once they did put it out there and got into the story, I realized that this is, I am passionate. I love to see great art, great drama, great writing, great acting. And I live for that. So when I realized that they had brought together such an extraordinary crew of talented people, and they were producing great writing, great acting, you know, and exploring the human condition and mirroring the world, that's everything that I live for. So even though obviously everybody would do things slightly different, I am so grateful to be part of such an incredible show that for me, it's very easy at this point to forgive anything, to forgive the fact that, yes, it hurt, yes, it was painful, that after all the hard work, we didn't get a continuation, but that had nothing to do with this, the reimagined version. It just had to do with we were fighting for what we wanted to see, and the networks didn't want to do it. So they did make a choice, and thank God their choice was to go with a really, really top-flight crew and creative team, and they put together the kind of project that I don't think there's too many people out there that couldn't that wouldn't have a tremendous respect and find the power and the entertainment value and the inspiration of this show. So I'm a huge fan, but that certainly doesn't take away from the fact that I love the original. But I had all my frustrations with the original had to do with the writing, had to do with the fact that they didn't get into the core story enough, and that wasn't the writer's fault. It was the networks and the studios. They didn't want to get into provocative, cutting-edge, darker story, you know, themes, which is what that Battlestar theme is all about. It's about survival under the harshest of conditions. And but they weren't ready for it back then. So, you know, I was a frustrated actor. I was a frustrated artist. And I love the Battlestar story, and I love the crew we had. I love the actors we had. And I thought we had a talented crew as well. But we weren't able to do what 25, 30 years ago, 25, 30 years later, they're able to do now with the technology, with the more open, you know, provocative topography that now is more accessible because of all the changes in our world. They're more open to going into these deeper, darker, more powerful dramatic areas, you know, and explore it. So like I said, this is the kind of show, the way it's put together, that I love. And the way it's filmed with, you know, four or five handheld cameras, it's very fluid, it's very immediate, it's very actor-friendly, there's a lot of rehearsal, there's a lot of interplay, a lot of collaboration between the actors and the director and the producers and the writers. It's an absolute joy to walk on the Battlestar set. And I noticed this week at WonderCon in San Francisco that many producers and people who have other shows, you know, like Heroes and Jeremiah and there's a bunch of other shows I can't even remember at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think that many of them really, really hold Battlestar in high regard and really, really appreciate the quality of the production, the quality of the writing. And there seemed to be a tremendous sense of what's the word, of respect for this show. And unfortunately, 30 years ago, there was a lack of respect for Battlestar. And I think a lack of appreciation for the effort that went into it. And although, fortunately, because of the networks having such a much higher, you know, less competition, the networks had far more people watching each network. So obviously our audience was far bigger at that time. But the audience today has been sliced up a thousand ways. You have so many different productions and cable channels and this is and that. So your audience is much smaller. But and I also do think it's impossible in this day and age to also critique or measure how many people actually are watching your show. It's impossible to follow the old measuring stick of the Nielsens. You know, you have people that are TiVoing the show. They don't want to watch it on a Friday night or Sunday night. They want to watch it when they want to watch it. Right. Many people will TiVo several shows and watch them back to back. And if you watch Battlestar, you know that you can't wait till next week. It's, you know, it's painful to have to wait till next week to find out what happened. So many people will TiVo several shows and then watch them back to back over the weekend. I mean, I think that's the more fun way to watch it, but nevertheless, it screws the ratings. And then, you know, you can get it on iTunes, you know, you can wait for the DVD. And so, and then a show plays several times anyway, you know, it plays Sunday nights, Monday nights, Tuesday. It plays several times, and sometimes they'll have a weekend and play 10 shows back to back. So how do you measure just how large, how big your audience is?
Right.
All I know is that everywhere I go, I have never seen such a respect for the Battlestar Galactica series, or I've never seen, and that's in high places. Not only the fan, you know, on the ground floor, but people who are in all walks of life, including, you know, major companies, corporations, and major areas of show business. They all seem to be aware of Battlestar now. So I know there's an incredible vast following. But I don't know if that's being measured correctly by the Nielsens. But nevertheless, you know, what can I say? I'm blown away to be a part of a show like this, and I formed my company and to develop similar kinds of properties that will, you know, obviously mirror the world, that are visionary, that are out of the box, looking for original designs and ways to do things, looking for more powerful stories that can touch people, move people, entertain people. So that's where I am, and that's what I'm involved in right now with my Great War Magellan project, which people will be hearing about next year as a trilogy of graphic novels. I'm doing the first Magellan novel with my co-writer from the Battlestar novels. I did seven of those, Brad Lionweaver. And we're doing an online role-playing game and a board game, and we'll do a CD-ROM game, and then we're raising the money to do, obviously, a whole bunch more stuff. So it's fun for me to, first of all, be part of the Battlestar Galactica universe, which has been the greatest passion that I've had. I love the Battlestar story. I think it is an extraordinary story of hope and redemption, you know. And at the same time, now I'm getting an opportunity to create another universe and play in that and let that spring forth from my own imaginings. And also, you know, I think I discovered that there's many facets to who Richard Hatch is, and I'm getting to explore all of them.
Do you want to plug a little bit more about? You said Great War of Magellan is coming out next year. The graphic novels.
Yeah, it'll be coming out next year. Although we are beta testing the role playing game, and we're, you know, obviously creating a role playing game forces you to really flesh out a universe. I created a story 5 or 6 years ago, and it has continued to evolve. The backstory, the mythology, the philosophical, the physics of this universe. You know, it's an amazing experience to create a universe, not just a story, but a whole universe, backstory, and so forth and so on. And so now the role-playing game has forced me to really get even more detailed and specific about that universe and to bring it all together and to anchor it, you know, it's like building the foundation of a house.
Right.
And once you build that foundation, you know, then you build a strong house on top of it. But without the foundation, the house will collapse. And so will a story, you know, if it's not doesn't have a strong, you know, roots, strong foundation to it. So I've been working very hard with some very wonderful artists, some of them that I've met all over the country here, traveling and playing my trailers. And I work with artists all over the country, Europe, Russia, Yugoslavia, Germany, every kind of place I have people I'm working with to work on designs, concepts. And again, I'm a big kid inside. I mean, I love to be blown away. I want to laugh. I want to cry. I want to be entertained. I want to be totally immersed in a world. But I also want to, like I said, I want something that stretches me, that opens me up, that gives me a deeper, more profound experience. And we get that in really, really good movies. I want to bring that into games. And I also want to bring it, obviously, into, you know, whether this is a movie series, which I would love to do, like The Matrix. I'd love to do a movie series of Magellan. That would be phenomenal.
And now this is taking us back into deep space?
Magellan, you know, I've always been fascinated by the relationship of Earth. You know, the original Battlestar, I love the fact that, you know, there are brothers of men who may, you know, be the forefathers of the Mayans and the Aztecs and so forth and so on. I love that original opening a lot. And I think we've all looked up in the sky and wondered, are there brothers and sisters of mankind out there? And so that kind of stimulated me to explore a root race of human beings who maybe had evolved thousands of years ago in another galaxy. You know, and basically it wasn't just about exploring another root race who may be similar to us, but I wanted to explore our own probable future through this root race by looking at the decisions they made, the paths that they chose to take, and where it took their civilization. And I wanted to do it in an honest way. I wanted to explore theoretical probabilities and possibilities. I wanted to extrapolate upon, you know, solid scientific underpinnings, sociological underpinnings, so that we in this world could possibly look at our own possible futures through the Great Wars of the Magellanic Cloud. And I also wanted to explore some very powerful philosophical concepts, like why is it that mankind continues to self-destruct? Why is it that one civilization after another, whether it was the Mayans or the Aztecs or the Romans or the, you know, the English, go on and on and on, these civilizations reach a pinnacle of achievement and then they self-destruct? What is it about mankind that has this penchant for war and self-destruction? I wanted to explore the philosophy of that. Is there a way out of that abyss? Is there a way for us to find redemption, to find a way to move beyond this before it's too late? And so I created a civilization that had been through multiple wars, multiple, you know, catastrophic events. And we explore through this root race the decisions, choices they made, and also maybe a deeper, more philosophical, spiritual understanding of what took mankind on this downward path of entropy to where they almost destroyed themselves. And is it possible to finally, you know, discover maybe ancient knowledge, maybe something we once knew that we forgot? In this case, they discover that there are certain understandings, wisdom, that we as human beings have forgotten, getting so caught up in our own selfish endeavors, you know, and needs to move forward, we sometimes forget the very things that bring us peace, prosperity, and happiness.
Yeah, what's in a bit? Listening and cashing it, Hillary. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
Stolen from the 80s.
Our life is trite and jaded, boring and confiscated. If that's your best won't do. Oh, we're right. Yeah. We're free. Yeah. We'll fight. Yeah. You'll see. Oh, we're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it. We're not gonna take it anymore.
And again, in the Magellanic Cloud, civilization started at the top, not at the bottom. The ancient Magellans were an incredibly evolved race. that seem to be able to do extraordinary things. Almost the abilities that we now relegate to heroes, the TV series Heroes, X-Men, whatever, you know, we've always been fascinated by what are the abilities that lie within every human being. Mm-hmm. You know, they say we use 2% of our abilities, 2% of our brain. Well, what if, you know, the ancient race actually had abilities to use all of these abilities? It was commonplace. And then over eons of time, these abilities got lost. The knowledge, the great wisdoms got lost. And civilization moved into what the Bible describes as the Great Fall. In a sense, Magellan is like the prodigal son. It deals with the great fall of mankind, and then mankind struggled to refind itself before it's too late, to struggle to come back on path, and of course reclaim its ancient heritage, its ancient wisdom and knowledge about that there is another way. There is a way to move beyond this penchant for war and destruction to evolve to a higher civilization. So we explore all of that in Magellan, and it begins. I'll give you just the beginning. It starts with the whole opening of the show. It starts at the University of New Mexico, where there is a professor of Celtic history and physics who has written a series of sci-fi novels. And essentially what we hear the voiceover say is that he goes, 300 years ago, I first set foot upon planet Earth. I am now a renowned novelist and professor of Celtic history at the University of New Mexico, having published my father's transcripts about an ancient star mariner who traveled far across the universe to save our civilization. And so it opens a whole door.
Right.
And I think people that have read great science fiction have always felt that great science fiction is visionary. Great science fiction sometimes is prophetic. Wouldn't it be interesting if this sci-fi story was so extraordinary that it actually happened? And it is through his, if you want to call it, sharing of this story that we enter into his path, his journey through the Magellanic Cloud, through his root race and home civilization. This man actually has taken his father's transcripts and turned them into sci-fi novels, and his father lived to be multi-thousands of years old. And ultimately we learn why that is, where he came from, what it is that caused him to live so long, and the great story that he has to tell. And it sheds light upon who we are as humans, why it is that we seem to keep making choices and decisions that cause such upheaval and destruction, and how the civilization, the Magellanic Cloud, ultimately found its way back home. And so it's a pretty powerful journey. I mean, it's like wrapping Lord of the Rings with with Mad Max, with okay. The Matrix, with, I mean, these are all separate stories, obviously, but each right. one of those kind of explored in a very profound way, you know, the power within all of us, the wisdom within all of us, and where we're going as a race of human beings, and what is possible, and what the pitfalls are. It seems like, I think we learn in the Magellanic Cloud, the Great Wars of the Magellanic Cloud, that not every civilization in the universe survives. We have this feeling that no matter what we do, we're always going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you learn is, through this ancient star mariner, Achillean, the first manned mission to the moon of Titan actually discovers a crashed spaceship. And the hologram of this professor at the University of New Mexico, his father, appears as a hologram inside this ship. And we begin to realize that, you know, these sci-fi stories are true. And that this man actually is going to have to leave Earth, because now the secret is getting out that there's a connection between this landing, this spacecraft, and these books, and that some of the information contained within these novels is futuristic science that is recognized by some of the people at NASA who actually have read these books and have opened the door to great curiosity to find out who in the world wrote these books and how did they gain access to this kind of knowledge and information. And this leads them, obviously, on a journey to find this professor, but he will have to leave because he's been there 300 years. It's time he's got to go before the world finds him. But the books will be left as a legacy, obviously, because they contain a lot of insights about humanity. And again, I borrow from some of the greatest philosophical books, historical books. I've researched for the past 10, 15 years so many different philosophies, and I've woven them all together into something that comes from my own gut. And obviously any artist does the same thing. We bring things that have happened in the world, and we weave them into a theatrical context. We add our imagination, and then we tell stories. But we try to connect these stories to some powerful universal truths so that they have a much more powerful effect on people than just as an entertainment. They actually make people think, you know, make people open their eyes and kind of begin thinking, so that maybe after they watch the movie, like Battlestar, they go out and have coffee and talk for 3 hours about what happened.
Right, exactly. Right, and as a creative person myself, that is the goal. You don't want to just make, you know, popcorn entertainment. I mean, that's fine for what it is, but you also, I mean, my goal is to touch people and to stimulate people, to provoke people. And it sounds like you're definitely, that's your ambition with the Magellan.
Yeah, I have no desire to tell people how to think or what they should believe, but I do want to challenge people to think. To step out of the box, to question their own belief system, judgments about the world, and maybe to look at the world in a larger way. Some people are terrified of space. I can't believe everybody doesn't support the space program.
Right.
I mean, out there in the universe lie a lot of mysteries, I think, that will help this world. And we need to begin moving to space, because whether it's 300 years from now or 3,000 years from now, there may come a day when we better be out in space, because, you know, we could be... this planet, obviously, we could be destroyed by an asteroid, by this, by that.
Right.
God knows all the possibilities. But
right. Cylons, need, right.
Sorry. By Cylons. We need to move forward. And so I'm a big supporter of the space program. And I also, you know, like I said, I'm into, you know, whether it's futuristic medicine. I'm not into woo-woo. I'm into actually exploring and extrapolating upon what we know now, the knowledge and wisdom we have now in the medical field or the scientific field, and then projecting into the future where we may be going. And I wanted to create a series that would allow us to have a window into our future probabilities of where we may go and the situations that may occur as a result of some of the decisions we're making. I wanted to play with all those ideas and develop a powerful a story of... I call it the prodigal son story, but it operates not only as a single individual getting lost and finding his way back, which is Achillean's story. He's the storyteller in this this whole Great War of Magellan. But, you know, it's a story of civilization getting lost and almost losing itself and then having to struggle to find its way back on course before it's too late. And, again, like I say, the underpinnings are deeply philosophical. Almost spiritual and profoundly, I think, moving. And I can't imagine anybody learning, reading something like this, not being stimulated in some way to ask questions that maybe they never asked in their whole life. And obviously, if you don't do all this in the most entertaining way, then no one's going to watch. So for me, you've got to have powerful characters that everybody can relate to, that you can care about, a powerful backstory that makes sense. And then you've got to really put, you know, these human beings into situations that will challenge and test their mettle. And that's what creates great drama. And then the underlying subtext is the deeper, more profound story that you're telling. And obviously that slowly starts to coalesce in your imagination. After watching the show for a certain amount of time, you start to gain a deeper insight of what this series is really all about. But great science fiction has always... asked the same questions and has always explored similar subject matter, and it's never been about, you know, monsters and foreheads. I mean, we all love a great monster, and a good forehead once in a while is not bad either. But science fiction, visionary science fiction, intelligent science fiction has never been about foreheads and monsters. It's about people.
Right. No, you don't mean Patrick Stewart. You mean the other. No, that was.
And by the way, I'm a big Star Trek fan. I am a big Star Trek fan. You know, I was a huge, the original show, Next Generation. I loved what Star Trek really was all about. I mean, I couldn't wait. That got me through some pretty bad times in my life. And I hear Battlestar, both old and new, has gotten a lot of other people through some pretty bad times in their life.
Yeah, I would say definitely, you know, from my own experience, definitely the, you know, the The old series was on when I was really small, but you know, it's a treasured memory. But the new series absolutely has been, it's been there. You know, it's been something to rely on and look forward to, and you know, to get me through. So I'm indebted to you and to Ron Moore and everyone. Okay, great. And you know, it definitely sounds, you definitely got my interest, and I know all my listeners are definitely going to be interested too. So I think we'll all be tracking that.
Continue. I actually want to read, by the way, at the next convention, I'm going to actually use some of the music we're composing now and read a couple of the chapters. I'm going to do that at my next panel. So people get a little bit of the taste of Magellan next time I do it. I think either at Comic-Con or Dragon-Con, wherever I'm going to go next, I'll definitely be reading some excerpts and showing some trailers and showing some artwork from the graphic novels and a whole bunch of other stuff. So anyway, just want to thank you for having me on, and we can obviously do this again at some point.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on. If you do that at Dragon Con, I'll definitely be there for that. And thank you so much for giving me this time and coming on the show. And it's been an honor talking to you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you so much. All right, have a good day.
B-A-S-O Domine.
Man's dead is the way.
Hey, Jack, this is Ditto. And I'm calling in with the contents of my fridge. Let's see what's in there. That's odd. It looks like the light burnt out. Let's see if it's just a little loose.
Ow!
Alvy, hey, what are you doing in my fridge?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Oh, I was just looking for something. Hi, Ditto. I was, just looking for, something.
Give me that.
Definitely looking for something, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Hey. Here, this thing with them looking for this thing I'm looking for.
Well, whatever it is you're looking for, I'm pretty sure it's not in my fridge.
Well, it could be.
Well, why would you think that?
Okay, well, you know how when you lose your keys, or the remote, or the girlie's phone number, or your sanity, or whatever, you're supposed to go and check all the places where you could have left them, right? Deb just following that.
Yeah, but isn't my fridge a little bit out of your way?
Yeah, but it pays to be sure, you know?
I guess so, but I really don't think whatever it is that you're looking for is in my fridge. You should just go home, Alvy.
Yeah, but...
No buts.
Can I keep this beer?
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Sweet.
See you later.
See ya.
And, that's it, Jack. Some interesting contents of my fridge. Talk to you later. Bye.
And okay, the official tally was, 639. 639 is the official Greasy Jelly Bean tally for this week. And so therefore, someone came very close. Holy crap, he hit it right on the head. Sorry, I guess maybe there should have been extra bonus points for guessing it exactly, but, there aren't. Congratulations anyway to Chris, a.k.a. Big Chowder of the Big Chowder Podcast. You rock, and you win a Greasy Jelly Bean point. So you and Amy Bowen are both poised to win the next Greasy Jelly Bean contest. Boy, I'm running out of gas here.
Right now, two men battling for pride and honor.
Hi, I'm Big Chowder from Sacramento in the United States.
And I'm Andy from Helsingborg, Sweden, and we've got a bet about who can walk the farthest.
That's right. We're both trying to shed some weight for our own reasons, so we've challenged each other to a walk-off.
We both have Garmin Forerunner units, which will use GPS systems to track how far we will walk in a given week, down to the meter.
Whoever walks the farthest each week will have bragging rights over the other, and since we both have podcasts, the loser has to send over an audio segment to the winner, where he gets to eat crow for both audiences to hear.
Of course, everyone knows that Americans can hardly walk to the fridge without getting winded, so I'm pretty sure this will be a breeze.
Whatever. You Swedes have such bad weather, you never have a chance to walk farther than just to your cars. You just hibernate all winter. When this is done, my friend, you're going to have egg on your face.
Well, you would probably eat it anyway.
Oh, okay. It's on. Let's get this challenge started.
Join us weekly, starting April the 2nd, for 8 weeks on each of our podcasts as we update the results of this historic, never-been-done International Podcaster Walking Challenge, and you get to listen to the loser admit defeat.
You can listen for the results on Chowder Radio at www.chowder-radio.com.
Or you can listen to them at the Polar Bear Podcast at www.polarbearpodcast.com.
And don't forget that you can subscribe to either podcast through the iTunes Store. Also, as a bonus, the listener who most closely predicts the total mileage walked between both of us over this 8 weeks will win a Polar Bear Podcast Chowder Radio prize package. To qualify, you need only send an email to both of us by the end of the second week with your predictions.
Join us for the fun, and may the best podcaster win.
Well, it isn't going to be you. Everybody knows that polar bears don't do much walking.
Well, what about you? Chowdress is soup. It just sits there. It doesn't even have legs.
I don't even need legs to beat you.
Oh, come on, give me a break.
Seriously, even as soup, I could dribble on the pavement farther than you could walk.
Yeah.
Hi, Deadpan. It's Amy Bowen with Airport Update Number 2 from San Francisco. Apologies for the announcement. I made it to San Francisco just fine. My flight did not get canceled. It's delayed, but only by 9 minutes. And I will be getting on my plane from San Francisco to Honolulu very soon. But I'm doing fine. I hope this goes well. Bye-bye.
And thank you for all those travel updates, Amy. I'm sure everyone at Deadpan wishes you safe journeys and happy journeys, and we hope to hear more.
Oh, I kick ass for the Lord!
All right, that's it. No more Deadpan for you. You've had way too much. Yeah, tons of content, even with the 30-plus minutes of Richard Hatch interview. Yeah, I need you to keep it coming. Email it to me, jack@jackmanga.com. Voicemail it in, 206-350-8664, 206-350-TOMI, or if you happen to catch me on Skype, I'm Spherical Jack M. Next episode will be number 53, and as of right now, I'm planning for that to be the Zardoz. The Zardoz-a-palooza, you know, where we're going to just geek out about the movie Zardoz. So if you have anything to add, anything to say about the movie Zardoz, and you know you do, damn it, then get your shit into me. All right, I'm done. No more talking. This is ridiculous. Thank you for being part of the Deadpan community. Deadpan is the way. Oh, wait a minute, you know what? I haven't done any jokes, so hold on. Let me click and find a good joke for you. Hang on, let's see. Alright, not great. Here's an unrelated thought.
Here's an unrelated thought.
Here's an unrelated thought. Wouldn't the John Lennon song, Jealous Guy, be so much better if you didn't know it was written for Yoko? Alright, and with that, I'm out of here. I'm actually going to play one more little soundbite from the Richard Hatch interview. Then there's going to be music, and I'm not coming back after any of that stuff. Keep it deadpan. Deadpan is the way. Deadpan for life, and everything else for deadpan. Good night, deadpan. Good night, air. Good night, noises everywhere.
I wanted to go into some areas that normally I don't talk about, so, you can always kind of give the same answers to questions, but I think there's always a deeper answer, more profound answer to every question. So I teach seminars and workshops all over the country. I speak and lecture at colleges, universities, business organizations, and I love challenging people to think, interacting with the public. Anybody that's been to my panels know that I love getting up in front and interacting with people because, that's the way we all learn. That's the way we all dialogue and grow as human beings. And so if I'm in a local area, if you see me, come out and come see my panel or workshop or seminar. I've done a couple of cruises that I've hosted, and really the underpinning of that is obviously you want to get together with a group of like-minded fans who want to share, talk, story, and go on an adventure. And then more than I teach my seminars and workshops. So I'm doing a cruise to the Eastern Caribbean next January 12th through the 19th.
Okay.
And you can go to richardhatchcruise.com and check it all out, or you can link over from battlestargalactica.com And then, you know, just keep checking Battlestar, the webpage, and also GreatWarMagellan.com, because you'll see all kinds of new trailers, artwork, and you'll begin to see some of the chapters of the new Magellan novel coming out that will start to give you a sense and a taste of the backstory and this powerful, powerful story that Magellan's all about.
And okay, I lied, I'm back. Here's one more update from Amy Bowen, followed by some of my tinkly guitar stuff.
Aloha, Deadpan. This is Amy with Airport Update Number 3. I'm in Hawaii. I made it. It was a long flight, but I got some writing done, and it's all good. So I'm sitting outside of the check-in area, waiting for it to be morning so I can check in for my flight, which is really tomorrow. It's going to be a long night. Good night, all.
The preceding program is part of the Farpoint Media family of podcasts. To find out more about Farpoint Media and the many other podcasts available, visit www.farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there.